Hello and welcome to the Legendary Leaders Podcast, where we chat all things leadership and personal development related, absolutely authentically and unscripted. On this podcast, my guests and I are going to introduce you to ideas and concepts that show how you can move past your fears, negative self-talk and constant doubts in order to encourage and motivate you on your journey to becoming a legendary leader yourself with more impact, influence and inspiration. So, are you ready for it? Welcome once again to Legendary Leaders, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Legendary Leaders, the podcast. I'm delighted to have you all here because today I have another lovely, lovely guest who's got a lot to share, in particular when it comes to leadership on various levels in organizations. Her name is Mia O'Gorman, and she has not only been a fantastic personal support to me, but she's supporting so many individuals, teams, and groups across organizations. She is an executive coach, a coaching supervisor, a leadership development consultant, and a life coach. And she has a wealth of knowledge and experience as a leader in organizations herself, but supporting leaders on various levels. Her sweet spot, I'd say, is in this transition from middle management to more senior management. When you are in this weird sandwich position where you don't quite know as to whether you should be more operational and really demonstrate how hands-on you are and that you can really support your team members. However, you also need to step up, as Mia said it, onto the balcony and really have a strategic vision, really build a path that you might not know yet as to whether it's going to work out or not, where people really follow you, where you drive the business, your department, your team towards success, and where you engage the people around you. And the sandwich position is a challenging one because you probably are in a position where your line managers, senior leaders, your peers, and your team do have some sort of requests from you, expectations from you, and then there's you right in the middle of it, potentially having the biggest expectations of all of them on yourself, and find yourself in a position where you beat yourself up, where you have self-limiting beliefs, and where the inner critique is coming out again and again and again. So if you want to have some insights into how you manage that, how you could get support to really overcome those challenges, and how to become just a little bit kinder with yourself and be a bit more patient and go with the flow at the same time, then you are in the right place. So listen to this episode, listen to what Mia has got to say, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. So have a great time, and I speak to you literally in a second. Hello and welcome to Legendary Leaders, the podcast. And today, as I've just mentioned, with me here is another fabulous guest, and that is Mia O'Gorman. Hello.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, you are more than welcome. I can't wait to hear more from you about leadership, leadership in organizations, how it has evolved, and where you see similarities and differences in the different levels. But also, obviously, we would love to hear about your own leadership story. You have started in corporate. You have worked in various areas in different industries as well. And nowadays, you are a very successful and passionate freelancer in the coaching and facilitation space. So tell us a little bit more about your own journey and what brought you to where you are right now.
Sure. So I guess the journey started at university and actually not really knowing what I wanted to do afterwards. Mm-hmm. But because I studied English and cultural studies, I thought I could blag my way into either HR or marketing.
Yeah.
And so I applied for a bunch of placements and got one in HR. In fact, it was still called personnel when I did it. And that was the beginning. So I worked for Rover Group in personnel and sort of progressed really to start to focus quite quickly on graduate recruitment and then also get into leadership development. And a big turning point, possibly the biggest thing really that set the direction for the rest of my career, was in my second organization, British Bank HBOS, was getting introduced to coaching really early on. we were rolling out a coaching culture program for around 2,000 branch managers in the retail network. And I was chosen as one of the people to be train the trainered and then to deliver that program. So our training was with John Whitmore's company, Performance Consultants, wow. and that sparked a passion for me. Mm. And so I've been really involved in and have loved coaching ever since. Going forward, I did a couple more in-house roles, one of which was for Aon UK. I was talent and succession manager. And around that time, I realized that as my career had progressed, I'd become more and more of a project manager of leadership development and less of a practitioner of it. So I'd been sort of taken away really from the part that I enjoyed the most, that was the most fun. So there I realized that the next step for me would be to transition into external consultancy. Okay. And I was able to do that in 2006. And then between then and just over 2 years ago, when I turned freelance, I worked for three different consultancies, one up in the English Lake District, where we had a very humanistic, experiential and outdoor based approach. Mm-hmm. Then for SHL, Savile & Holdsworth. So people may know that firm still as one of the world's largest occupational or organizational psychology houses. So I had a consultancy role there doing a mixture of talent assessment and development work. And then I worked for a consultancy that specializes in leadership development through emotional intelligence. Mm. I was there for 6 years. Mm. And that sort of consolidated and deepened everything that I'd learned before, and had the chance there to really build what I would call a proper executive coaching portfolio, but do work of much more depth and longer duration with leaders and also really in the organization development space. So I loved being an external consultant for those 12 years. I loved the variety. I loved getting insights into different industries. I loved having my skills stretched both as a coach and facilitator, but also, you know, the business development and the sales piece. Mm-hmm. But in the end, again, I found I was being pulled more into that area of business development and sales and account management, and was getting pulled away from my real passions of being a coach and coaching supervisor, because I trained as a supervisor during that time, and a facilitator. So what happened is that the organization was full of gifted coaches and facilitators, fewer of us that were comfortable in that business development space. So I was pulled into it. And that was a big informer really for my decision to start my own business, to go freelance, and to put coaching and supervision and leadership development practice again back at the core of what I do.
Wow, that's quite a journey. And you mentioned a few times, this wasn't what I really wanted to do, or I did less of what I really wanted to do. And you were referring to your passion. Mm. So coming back to emotional intelligence as well, how do you understand and know what your passion is? How do you understand what you need in that moment and when to make change happen?
So I think people talk about that flow state. Victoria, that you interviewed recently, talked about the flow state. So I think when you're doing something that's your passion, you will feel that sense of flow, kind of joy in the, you know, the intrinsic task or whatever the activity is itself. And then it's also feeling a sense of contribution through that. So a quote that I have, actually I have this on my website and I thought of it again as I was preparing for this today, is the idea of a vocation, and that a vocation is a place where a person's deep joy meets the world's deep need, where what is particular about one of us is linked to the service of others. And I heard that on The Thought for Today on Radio 4. It's from Canon Angela Tilbury, you know, just at the time when I was really getting ready to take that step and launch my business. And I think your passion may be for a lot of people connected to that vocation. So if you can contribute and bring value to others through doing what you love, that's really is what the driver was for me to take that step.
Yeah, so you have this inward and outward facing look at things. You know exactly what's your passion. You understand when you're on the flow, you're really kind of attentive to that. But at the same time, you pay attention to the outer world and what they need. And you really seek to understand what those needs are. Mm. That is really important as well.
Yeah, because you could have a passion that's something that you do purely for you, you know, purely for your own enjoyment, purely for your own satisfaction. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think one of the differences I've really felt in these last couple of years has been, you know, actually to put the things I'm passionate about firmly at the center of what I do, and this time not get pulled in different directions by other job or organizational demands.
That is very important what you're just saying. I remember when I left my corporate job and I moved into freelancing and running my own business, that I lacked two things. One was freedom to decide what I do, how I do it, who I work with. Mm-hmm. And the second one was this need for constant development. But development where I'm in the flow as well. So development I really enjoy and embrace. And I noticed that those were two of my core values that weren't met in that moment. How important are values to you, and how do you make decisions upon your own values?
Yeah, I think values are absolutely core, because when any of us, when we're living in alignment with our values, that's when we're likely to feel that sense of flow, sense of joy, that sort of feeling that everything's right with the world. Whereas often when we're becoming uncomfortable or we're starting to notice the need to change, I think that's often because we've got pulled away from living in alignment with our values, or perhaps that our values are actually shifting, which can happen over time. You know, they're quite deep in our personality structure or our psyche, but they're not unchangeable. So if our values shift, we may then find we need to change, or it may be that our values haven't changed but our circumstances have, then we need to take action. So for me, I have a set of core values that I've reflected on over time and that I seek to live around. So those for me are quality, authenticity, generosity, growth, and renewal. And then I would say also there'll be other values that will be in play in our life at any one time. So a real clash I had and the struggle of becoming successful in the freelance world was a clash between values around responsibility and kind of freedom and growth, and feeling that in my bid for freedom, in my bid for growth, I was really risking a lot financially in terms of security and potentially in terms of career progression. And so, yeah, I guess around 8 months in to being freelance, had a real crisis point around the pull between my sense of responsibility and my sense or the importance to me of freedom and growth at that time.
So how did that pan out? Can you describe that a little bit further?
Yeah, I guess as a lot of people do in that transition, I'd plan to take a few months out to kind of resettle and have clear headspace to think about what I wanted to do. And then I started to take action based on that, and some of the things I wanted to were happening and other things were very different to what I'd maybe expected or how I thought I would start to earn money. And it got to the point where I was really panicking about depleting my savings in that time and kind of using this money, a lot of which came from an inheritance from my great uncle, who lived an incredibly kind of modest and I guess responsibility driven life. And I had this point, I was like, my God, you know, my great uncle Neville would be turning in his grave if he knew I was self-indulgently doing this big experiment and, you know, frittering away. And all of that was just kind of the massive inner critic kicking in that state of uncertainty and change and I suppose growth that I was going through. But yeah, it's that kind of inner critic or saboteur. But what I realized with the help of a coach, actually, I engaged a coach to support myself at that time, was that my ordering of my values had shifted, the prioritization had shifted. And that whereas for so many years, I'd kind of kept going, doing the right thing, agreeing to take on those different job roles and responsibilities that took me away from what I was really passionate about, that built a career, that built an income, that served the organizations I was employed by. And I'd always put that sort of sense of responsibility ahead of the freedom and growth. And actually, you know, the process of changing to live in alignment and prioritize my own development over that sense of responsibility was really, really tough.
Yeah.
You know, it's psychological rather than practical. So actually, at the time I was having this crisis point, I still had enough savings left to literally earn nothing for a year. It wasn't that bad, but it's the impact of, say, that critic or that saboteur kicking in. You know, you talked in the briefing notes for the podcast around helping people that might be going through similar transitions, that journey of self-leadership. And even as a coach, even as someone who knows lots of development models, I could anticipate intellectually some of the changes that I would go through, but actually, you know, the emotional impact of being in that place myself was massive, was so much more than I anticipated.
That's exactly it. We are humans, right? You are an excellent coach, particularly leadership coach, and I think you have helped so many people, but it doesn't mean that you are resistant against any change and challenges that you are facing yourself. And that brings the richness in your support and in your help. So I think every experience you have had in the past that you are going through now, any challenge that you have, will add value to your clients. Sure. And therefore, all the service that you have been delivering and giving to people in organizations as an employee, I think that has probably enhanced now and has an even richer quality now in your position.
Yeah, absolutely. So that whole journey, really, I would say around the first year from leaving my paid consultancy role and getting sort of about a year into to being freelance, was just such a reminder of how challenging and also how rewarding change can be, and the value then that coaching brings to that. You know, coaching is all about change. It's all about helping the client go from where they are now to where they want to be. And, you know, that process of human change is hard. It's tough. Yes. And it's, I guess it's another reason that I love the opportunity to do what I do and help people succeed in their changes, in their transitions.
How do you think has coaching changed over the last few years? Have you seen any change?
Yeah, so I think there are some important changes. A book I've just finished reading is by Peter Hawkins and Eve Turner, and it's called Systemic Coaching. And they talk in there about a challenge they were given, which described coaching as expensive individual development for the already highly privileged. And you kind of think, ouch, when you hear that, but often that there's an element of truth in it. So the thinking being, how, as a coach, when I work one-to-one or when I work with a small leadership team, how can the work we do together add value, not just to those individuals, but to the people that they serve? So perhaps the teams that they lead, you could extend that out to their partners, you know, stakeholders of all kinds, the end customers of their businesses. You could think about the community that those organizations are based in, and also the wider ecological system. We know we're in a climate crisis. So, you know, how through the work that we do in the coaching or facilitation room, can we widen our impact as much as possible? So I think that's a key shift that's going on. And, you know, in reading that book, it really resonated with something that I've always felt around coaching, which is that it's generative. You know, if I coach one person and they become a better leader, that does have an impact, a ripple effect on many, many more. Or if, as a coaching trainer or supervisor, I help someone get better at being a coach, then they go out and coach 100 people, and all of those 100 people go out and you know, give more to the world. That's really important. So, yeah, so I think thinking more systemically, bringing more of the voices and stakeholders into the room, I think is really important. And I think other changes in coaching, but in leadership development more broadly, would be around just recognizing the importance for everyone of, you know, the whole person, and a lot more openness to different ways of working, that what that means. So when I joined the EI-based consultancy in 2011, we would still quite often get challenges, you know, isn't this all pink and fluffy stuff? You know, isn't this all a bit soft? What about, you know, really doing the work? Whereas these days, I think you could go into a senior leadership team and ask people in the room how many have a mindfulness or meditation practice, and most would be really happy to put their hand up and say, yes, that's something that I do every day. Yeah. I just couldn't imagine of asking about that, you know, if I go back, you know, sort of 6 or 8 years. Whereas, you know, now, for example, people are so much more accepting, I think, of, you know, things like the whole sphere of emotional intelligence and the importance of that. But yeah, more broadly, personal development, spiritual development as part of what will make leaders successful.
I just started working with a business that actually has created their own model of the whole person model. Mm-hmm. because they really realize that people come to work as human beings. They don't just leave their personal life at the doorstep. Mm. They might not show every facet of it because you have professional boundaries, obviously, as well. However, they really play to the whole person and how much a person wants to share, which is so, so important. Mm. And I don't know how you feel about that, but I have delivered a few leadership programs lately. I've been in a room with the participants, leadership teams on various levels, and people say, I can't change anything about my situation. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about, okay, what options do you have and where could you change? Mm-hmm. And we always end up with the discussion about, but that is not enough. We need a big change, instead of approaching it from a perspective of, okay, what are the small changes I can make? Right here, right now, step by step, every day. And coming back to what you just said about a ripple effect, mm-hmm. how can that become contagious in the most positive sense to other people? And we create that ripple effect.
Sure.
In order to create more change as a community that is growing and growing. So that is something really important in the coaching, leadership development world, but generally in life, that we start small. Mm. And then create change together, doing it consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, self-leadership is the beginning of it. So another body of work I came across really early on, which I've always kept in mind, was Stephen Covey's writing. And he talks about, you know, leading from the inside out. Mm. Yeah. And again, I would acknowledge the role of values there. If you're well connected to your own values, then they can guide your behavior in the big choices in life, like the mm-hmm. example I talked about, but also day to day. So then you can say, you know, if I'm leading myself, what's the small change I can make? Yeah. And if I'm doing that well, then I start to, you know, have earned respect and the capacity to lead other people. And that doesn't always mean in a formal leadership hierarchy. You know, you will be leading by example, and therefore you will, you know, earn that respect, earn that followership. Exactly. And that will grow the more consistent that you are.
So in your role, in your work, how do you help other people truly connect with their values?
So sometimes we might do an actual reflection specifically around values to help people identify it. But very often they will emerge in the dialogue of coaching through how people are responding to the situations that they're in and the choices of action that they take. So actually just last week, I was working with someone, a leader in a large consulting organization, who was describing what they'd found a kind of a difficult evening being at a dinner with many of their colleagues of different levels of seniority, but that the conversation was drifting between informal things and things to do with work. And they'd found this really challenging. They'd wanted it to be fun. They'd wanted to kind of put aside the challenges of the work world. Mm. And what was emerging through that was a value that they held around friendships that they'd built over a long time and very intense, challenging work, actually, that they'd been doing. And kind of feeling caught between that value of friendship and then what was going on in the room, which was taking it back into a workspace. And this is also someone who's been working a lot on their own work-life balance and prioritizing their needs and kind of seeking that, having given a lot to their work and career. And so it felt like those two values around friendship and fun, and then around, say, this sort of sense of balance and time for themselves were being thrown up by this kind of quite fluid, ambiguous, you know, is it work or is it social dinner that they were in. Mm. So in an example like that, the value is emerging from that person's life experience. And what I did as a coach in that moment was to, you know, to kind of tentatively gently reflect that back and just say, look, you know, this is what I'm hearing. Often as a coach, I'm listening for the unspoken mm-hmm. that's coming out in the dialogue and working with that.
Yeah. And that in a gentle and supportive way. People don't dare necessarily to open up about what's mm-hmm. on their minds, what's maybe their concern, and so on and so forth. And to have someone who's holding up the mirror and then expresses it is really important and brings us a completely different level of awareness. Lovely. Mm. What I find intriguing about the work you're doing is, amongst other pieces, that you're working with very different levels of leadership and leadership teams. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the differences in leadership between the more emergent mid-managers up to the senior levels and directors and so on and so forth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that there are transitions at every level to make in terms of how you use your time, the skills that you need to bring to bear. And I think importantly, and I guess where people often struggle, is in identifying with the value that you add in your role. So for example, at the first transitions between being an individual contributor and a team leader. So let's say, for example, I am an ace computer programmer. You know, I write code, I find bugs, I fix stuff. Great. So I'm doing this so well that I get offered the opportunity to become a team leader. So I think, brilliant, next rung up on the career ladder, let's go for it. But then suddenly I'm going to find when I move into that team leader role that I'm not supposed to be on the keyboard anymore writing code and fixing bugs. I'm organizing the workload of all my former colleagues doing that and supposed to be coaching them and kind of planning ahead. And so it can be hard to let go of that older skill set or feel that you're losing touch with it and move into the new expectations of you, which you'll say around planning, organizing, people, management and leadership, coaching others to do what I used to do. And so each layer of leadership has those transitions. So you'll next go from, for example, being a team leader to being a leader of leaders. So now you need to coach people on how to coach their teams, for example. And provide probably greater breadth of thinking, maybe more strategic input. So for me, I found over time, I haven't particularly sought this out, but over time I've found I'm often doing a lot of work with leaders in what I'd call that mid to senior leadership transition. And the key changes there seem to be around moving from getting work done that adds value today, so often through teams, sometimes through quite extended and large teams, but essentially, you know, getting things done, to having to work with a lot more flexibility, work with a lot more ambiguity, and work a lot more collaboratively, really make time to look ahead, to think more broadly about what the area of responsibility is contributing and who the stakeholders are, and invest time in meetings and other conversations that are not going to add value today, but that are going to add value tomorrow. And it can feel uncomfortable for a lot of leaders because it's not so tangible. It's not so immediately rewarding. You might have to have conversations over a period of weeks or even months before you're able to put the different pieces together and kind of have that moment of aha insight where you're like, okay, so this is where we need to go next. A few years ago, I worked with someone who was approaching promotion to partnership in a law firm. And this was a real part of the challenge for that individual. And within the legal world, they actually talk about having conversations with clients and they have this phrase off transactions, which means I'm going to speak to somebody not about a bit of legal work we're doing right now, a transaction, as they call it in that profession. And so one of the development points for this individual was to be creating that time to have those off transactions conversations, to get to really know their key clients, to get to become a trusted advisor, you know, to be the person that they would think to ring if they just had a query or an upcoming area that they might want some advice on. And it was such an odd phrase. I had to ask what he meant the first time that he used it. But it really stuck with me. And it's a great example of that transition. I'm in that mid to senior role where you need to, as a leader, kind of let go a little bit of getting the day-to-day stuff done, but just start to think, you know, longer term, broader horizons, and sit with ambiguity until you're able to connect the different pieces of data that you're gradually picking up.
I think the additional challenge here, in particular in those roles, is that your inner critique might pop up with regards to various areas of your role and of the person you are. And what I experienced in my first and second manager and leadership roles was really this inner need to please everyone. So whilst you take time to figure everything out, but also to let it fall into place and to have those little puzzles maybe still in the space of ambiguity, other people may hover around you asking for certainty.
Sure.
And obviously you've got in your role, you've got to communicate and bring people on board and show your authenticity that you don't know everything and that you build the trust, but it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important also to focus on the person and all of their insecurities and how they deal with it and feel okay with their inner critique, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thinking about some coaching conversations I was having last week with someone, again, who's recently been promoted into a director role from a previous senior manager role in their organization. And these were some of the things that they've reflected on. They're about 8 months into the promotion now, and sort of talking about wanting to be there for their team, wanting to be visible and present and kind of a bit be in the trenches with them, and feeling guilty, for example, about perhaps the team need to stay on and do work that in the past they'd have been in there doing that themselves, whereas they've had to maybe go off to a meeting overseas and kind of thinking, oh, you know, should I cancel this? Should I be there and support? But actually, if they did that, they'd be doing a disservice to themselves and to, you know, the other people that they're meeting with and the wider organization, because they'd be less informed to shape and guide the direction of that team going forward. So I think that particularly people working in that middle leadership layer have a lot of conflicting demands placed on them, because they typically, you know, they're kind of really driven to do the right thing, to look after their teams, to provide that sense of certainty and security, while they're also needing to manage up and to engage with the senior leaders around them to take the direction. And yet at that same time, even those senior leaders might be saying, well, you know, can you reassure me about how you're going to get this thing done?
Exactly.
They're asking for certainty as well. So yeah. I think it's kind of a really fascinating stage of people's career to work with them as a coach, because there are so many demands, and to see people kind of being able to gradually let go of some of the things that have made them successful so far and create the time and go through the learning curve to pick up the new things, the different things that are going to help them succeed as they go forward into those bigger and broader roles.
Yeah, exactly. So what is it you would recommend to those middle managers who have all of these challenges around them? What are some of the top tips you would share with them?
So I think this is not my metaphor, but I really love it. There's an idea of for leaders, you can be down on the dance floor or you can be up on the balcony. So one tip for leaders in that position would be, make sure you get some time to be up on the balcony. So what do we mean by that? By that I mean, take some time to look ahead to what's in your diary, maybe in the coming month to 2 months, and to be quite ruthless in asking, you know, what really adds value? You know, what needs me to be there? What meetings might I still be going to out of habit because they're always what I've done? What can I delegate to my team? Have you given yourself some planning and thinking time, so that you can, you know, notice the patterns that are emerging in all the data that you're gathering through these things that you're doing? And are you making time for kind of really anything that's important, that's value adding, but that isn't yet urgent? Because that's where we'll add the most value as leaders, if we can get into the stuff that's important but not urgent. And so often around them, there'll be lots of urgent demands. Now, those might be genuine crises. Business is a contact sport, so there will be some of those for sure. But also be really, really alert to what feels like a crisis, but is actually just noise in the system. You know, what can you negotiate the timings on? What can you push back so that you're, you know, through that process of getting yourself up onto the balcony, stopping to take a look and see if you're adding value where you need to. And often it's the letting go that's hard. People will overload themselves with new responsibilities and learning and trying to take things on, but really letting go of some of the older things can be difficult. I think another area for leaders in that place would be to make sure that you're really looking after you. Because if you always put yourself at the bottom of the list, then the risk is that you run out of physical energy or you become emotionally stressed, and you're then in less good a place to serve the people whose needs you're trying to meet.
Beautiful. And I couldn't agree more. And it's, believe me, an ongoing journey to practice that. I speak out of my own experience here.
So
yeah, and I would put my hand up to that too, absolutely. So it's, you know, sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, if you're a coach, you must be some kind of, you know, near perfect human being floating around on a bountiful cloud of self-worth. It's not always like that. So yeah, you know, I find myself also, you know, I will say yes to too many things. I'll want to squeeze stuff in and then it becomes challenging to do. And then I'm kind of, you know, writing a proposal at the weekend, you know, whatever it happens to be. So yeah, it's absolutely an ongoing journey, and being able to offer that advice doesn't mean I'm always following it myself 100%, much as I try.
I have one more question for you, and that is, what does great leadership look like to you?
For me, great leadership is a big component of authenticity in there. So for me, a leader is someone who I can get to know as a human being. Also, I will look for leaders that I can respect. So I'm looking for people who do walk their own talk, who can choose the right moment to kind of come into the trenches, come onto the dance floor with you and give you that direct and hands-on support. And people who can really provide perspective and balance. So if I think about, you know, some of the tough times that I've had within organizations, you know, whether it's been post-recession, sort of, you know, needing to bring the business out of tough times, or specific challenges, mistakes that have been made, redressing that, the things that have really felt painful and difficult, the leadership I've valued the most on those occasions has been from individuals who've helped me, you know, broaden my perspective, see the value of what I'm doing, and I guess take the learning from those situations.
Yeah. Wonderful. What a fantastic closure to a beautiful episode. Thank you so much, Mia. I think people would love to know where they can find you and where they can find out more about you. So do share with us.
Sure. Okay. So people can find me at my own website, which is coachingwithmia.com. And also on LinkedIn. So I checked this morning, there are only three Mia O'Gormans. I'm the one that's based in Cheltenham, UK.
Lovely. Fantastic. And we are going to publish a little bit of an exercise with you as well, so that you can just understand what are your values. How can you really get in touch with your values? And as you have heard, they are absolutely important and essential for your leadership in terms of self-leadership, but also leading others and making decisions in your life, really. So that's going to be a part of the show notes. Do click on it. We are always publishing, obviously, the social media links as well. So have a visit to Mia's website and see what she's all about at the moment. I really love to have you here on the show. It has been brilliant. And I think we could talk about that topic, leadership, forever and ever. Do get in touch with Mia. It has been a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
All right. Have a great week and speak to you again next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Legendary Leaders Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe to the show either on iTunes, Spotify, or on my website, www.kathleenmerkle.com, so that you can hear more about our next episodes. I would also love to hear from you to discover what topics you'd like to listen to on this podcast. Please head over to kathleenmerkle.com/podcast and let me know. You can also find me on Facebook in the Legendary Leaders Facebook community. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you again on our next episode of the Legendary Leaders Podcast. Take care. Bye.